This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. We're on Sunday evenings at 8 p.m. and we rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. District Council 37 is the city's largest union of city workers. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We are now available as a podcast on your iPhone. You can download, just search for State of the Union, DC 37, on the podcast app. And we're also, you can be downloaded on the www.dc37.net. That's the DC 37 website. Tonight on the show, we have Liz Ackles, who is the Executive Director of Community Food Advocates, talking about our efforts to get universal free lunch in all our public schools. But with us right now is SSEU Local 371 President Anthony Wells. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Chris.
Welcome back to the show. It's always good to have you on. We're going to talk about this new ACS initiative to equip frontline workers with high-tech devices. That's something that was announced earlier this week. The new commissioner talked about this at a city council hearing. Let's talk about the new commissioner first. This is a fellow who I think has been pretty supportive of the work that your members do.
Oh, yes, Chris. First of all, thank you for having me on the show.
Always a pleasure.
Second, David Hassel, I've known for many years from his previous involvement in city government and Human Resources Administration, where he was chief of staff for the then commissioner. And so we've had a pretty good working relationship in the past. And since he's been an ACS commissioner, we have open lines of communication, which I think is always positive and always gives you a chance to be more successful in representing the members and improving the services for the citizens that we service.
And when you don't have that, life is a pain. Life is difficult.
Yeah, unfortunately, we've experienced that with previous administration, ACS, and at that time, a lot of things went wrong. And I tell you, to be honest with you, we are now suffering from some of those policies, I believe, that were implemented during that period. And we're trying to turn that around. Obviously, our goal is to protect the children and the families of the city of New York. And my members do a heck of a job day in and day out.
And it's also a dangerous job. Why don't we talk about that a little bit? What are some of the issues that come up with members when they're out in the field?
Well, the first thing is, we have a saying that we never know what's on the other side of that door. So you may get a report, and the report may not always include all the particular dangers. So our members go into some dangerous situations, unknown situations. When you're talking about dealing with people and their children and the possibility that the children have to be removed, there's always that.
That's a volatile situation. That's a volatile situation. I mean, that's not like everybody's at the best behavior and everybody's doing well emotionally. That's a very tough situation to be in.
And it is. And it's tough regardless of your economic or social status. You know, people that focus on so-called bad neighborhoods and things like that. But you know what? This happens everywhere. So our concern, obviously, is for the safety of our members. And we try to give them the best tools to do that, including talking about common sense issues. Like, you know, if your situation gets out of hand, that you need to secure your safety. Okay? And you need to make sure that you're safe. Because if they're not safe, they can't protect anyone. So we talked about a whole host of measures. Back in 2012, with the help of local 1180, CW 1180, and our own sister union 1549, and with the support of the city, we actually got a felony law bill passed, which makes it a felony to attack any social service worker in the line of duty. So we're looking for that to be enforced. Okay, we have encouraged this agency and actually got them to adopt a policy of coworker assist for the purposes that four eyes are better than just two. And so therefore, the worker who accompanies that worker to a field visit can also see things and focus on things that the worker who's interviewing may not see, may not be able to focus on.
That's a,
and so
That's a
that
different.
That helps also.
That's a change in policy in terms of having folks go out in pairs as opposed to individuals going out separately. Is that?
It's not necessarily changed, and even and we actually got that in administration that we really did not have a good working relationship with, but they even they recognized that the safety issues. So at one point it was strongly encouraged, and now I believe it's really a policy that's at the option of the worker. And so it's not mandatory. A worker decides whether they need a coworker assistant or not. And with the help, obviously, of the supervisor, they make the decision. So it's not mandatory to go out in pairs. But if you feel like you need it once again, for any kind of safety issues, you can actually get one. And it's supposed to be readily available to you.
Now, what is this new... the Daily News referred to it as referred to them as high tech devices. What are these, and how do these work, and when are they supposed to be implemented?
Okay, well, I can tell you, well, you know, so far we haven't met on this issue.
Okay,
and definitely, let me just tell you what it was. The commissioner, at our urging and his own initiative, actually went out into the field with these workers and went out and made visits, and in his conversations. He found out they didn't have some of these high-tech issues. So there's two pieces to it. One is a phone app that will allow the worker to directly notify 911 that they are in trouble. Okay, and what it does is puts them in the system. That's my knowledge of it.
Okay.
Clearly, it appears that the worker can do this without the knowledge of anyone else in the room. So that's a good feature. The other issue on technology is on pads, tablets. And this is not the first time this has been initiated and spoken about. But this commissioner is really in support of it. And we're not against it, but there are some concerns that we have, and that's why we need to have a discussion. So though he announced a pilot and they want to implement by the end of the year, we're here. And so there are certain obligations and procedures that must go through, and they must have a conversation with us about what this means. And let me just give you a couple of issues about this. There are security issues, obviously, with the phones. There are issues about confidentiality. What happens when the phones are lost? What happens if the phones are stolen? Okay, who bears responsibility for some of this stuff? Okay, somehow in the past when we had this discussion, some of our female workers brought the issue that it would require them to have bigger bags. Bigger pocketbooks, you know. I mean, so those are real issues. What's the size of these tablets? Okay, and do you want to advertise that you're walking around with an electronic device?
Right.
And where will you go? These are something. I'm sorry.
No. Are any of the workers now using these tablets? Are these tablets out in the field now, or is this something that would be taking place as a brand new initiative?
Well, according to him, he actually has. People using them, which I told them was problematic for me because I was unaware that, in fact, they had done this on a minimum basis. They had done this before years ago, okay, where they wanted workers to take these tablets while they were in court. And that time, there was some testing done on them that they would use them while they were in court to update their records, okay? So that was one piece of it. So I'm not quite sure where this has happened how in depth it is, but we're going to have those conversations quickly, okay? Before a full blown pilot is issued, he wants to do a full blown pilot. I understand for about 300 workers, we need to talk about that. We need to talk about what that means and where is that going to happen, and which workers are we talking about? So, at this point, not enough information, but I am comfortable that we will have those discussions. He told the city council publicly, he told me privately that he intends to have those discussions, and he will, and we will. And
okay.
We'll come sooner than later.
We've been talking about staffing. I've got a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to make sure that you got to talk about staffing and what your feelings are on how staffing should be addressed.
Staffing should be addressed in two manners. One, they need to use what we call an attrition model. There's attrition in ACS between 20 and 25%. You know that already. You know
right.
that now.
Right.
So you should have approval to hire at least 20 to 25% workers now.
In anticipation of that. Right.
Absolutely. HIA has implemented such a plan. It doesn't work perfectly, but I guess what? It gets you ahead of the curve. And unfortunately, in ACS, it was a period due to some management, whatever.
Okay.
Well, they stopped hiring for like a 6 month period. And when we found out about it, we alerted the upper management to it, who also were unaware of it. And they immediately began hiring it, but it put them behind the eighth ball. Okay? Because what happened was, they were having attrition and not hiring, even though the mayor and the commissioner had authorized hiring. So they were playing catch up. So they had a double. And then, of course, you had high-profile cases, which did not help the situation. And people were leaving. So staffing has been brought up. The mayor has a good plan, but it's supposed to be more aggressive. They need more aggressive hiring. They also need to look at the training modules in terms of content and also length. And I think they're beginning to do that, because if you don't get these workers out there quickly, as quick as you can, then that's also creating a problem, as it were, a staff backlog, as it was. And so we're looking to improve that. So you definitely need more CPS workers and need more supportive staff. No one ever talks about that, but in some of these cases, we need more clericals to help out with some of the processing of these cases. You know, you need more supportive staff. And I think we're on the right path. But as I said, when the commissioner came on, I am optimistically hopeful. And thus far, I think he is continuing to do what he said he was going to do. And he, one thing he does do, and I know it without any question, he cares about workers. He cares about this field. He's not only a person who's been in government, he's also been an activist. So he understands from both sides of the coin what it means to be out there doing frontline work, advocating for clients, and then he also knows what it means to be an administrator.
Well,
it's a daunting job.
We're going to, you will be back on this show, and we will be talking about the progress that's being made, and if necessary, the lack of progress that's being made.
If I may quickly leave one more second,
sure.
Please. There's also another initiative. We're also hooked up with the NYPD's NCO program, Neighborhood Coordinating Office, Community Officer, and we're working with a relationship with them to help frontline workers in the field also, where they can get quicker police assistance and a more cooperative working relationship between NYPD, the officers, and the frontline workers. And that initiative was just announced about the NCO program, but I wanted to throw this in also, as far as helping our workers and helping with safety issues. So it does two things. It helps with safety issues, and also helps to work closer with NYPD to provide effective services to these communities and share information that can help both the workers and the clients.
Very important. SSEU, Local 371 President Anthony Wells. As I say, I'd love to have you back on to talk about how the progress that's being made, or if necessary, the lack of progress that's being made. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Chris, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
And we'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
Welcome back. This is State of the Union, the DC 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. We have talked on this show before about the idea of universal free school lunch for all public school students. We are in the throes of the budget process at City Hall. And earlier this week, actually last week, union leaders, elected officials, public school parents, and community activists took to the steps of City Hall to renew the call for universal school free lunch in all of our public schools. I'm going to play a little bit of a clip right now from that press conference.
My name is Liz Ackles, the Executive Director of Community Food Advocates. We're here because we have a simple request. Make free lunch universal for all New York City public school students. Turn it over to Henry Garrido, the Executive Director of DC 37.
We are here because we support universal school feeding in the school system. It is ridiculous that in this city, today, we're still talking about children going hungry because we have a system that overtly identifies those children. It's time to put a stop to it.
I'd like to now bring up public advocate Letitia James.
Too many children in our schools feel and dread the stigma associated with the free lunch program. And we have to remove the stigma. We need to make sure that all children are valued. And we should not have two lines and two processes in every school.
Sean, Francois the first.
Well, I used to work in those kitchens, and I seen those hungry kids come to the line. Now, I was told if I fed them, I will lose my job. But guess what? I fed them. Bottom line, first child to the last child should be fed.
Joining us now is Liz Ackles, the Executive Director of Community Food Advocates. Welcome back to the show, Liz.
Thanks, Chris.
And that was, there was Liz and there was Henry Garrido from DC 37 and Tish James, the city's public advocate, and Local 372 President Sean Francois. There were a number of folks calling for this. Let's talk about where we are with this fight and where we've come from. You were on the show about 3 or 4 months ago when we first began this. So I give you the mic.
Okay. Well, we're in the last few weeks of the budget session, and where things stand right now is there still is resistance from the administration to bring universal free school lunch to all students. We have very strong support in the city council. We have, it's one of the top budget priorities. So we're very, you know, that's very important to us. We have public advocate Letitia James. It's a top priority for her, as it has been for the last several years. And we have all five borough presidents on board. So we're just looking to keep as much pressure on over these next few weeks to make sure that the mayor is feeling some heat about this and that the council knows how urgent this is as things kind of in the last rounds of negotiations play out.
I just want to take a step back. I was watching Greta Van Susteren had a segment on her show on MSNBC a couple of weeks ago. It was about lunch shaming in schools.
Yeah.
Which was the most, and I think it came out of a New York Times story. People don't understand the reality of what happens inside the school. And I'd like if you would to talk about that a little bit, this phenomenon of lunch shaming.
Yeah, so it lunch shaming plays out in a few different ways. There are hundreds of thousands of children who are income eligible to participate in free school lunch that don't participate, especially as they get older, because they become more and more aware of the poverty stigma associated with the program. And no child wants to be marked with the label as the poorest kid in the room, because even in schools where many of the children our families are living in poverty, there's still a pecking order that takes place in the cafeteria. And it has a very direct impact on the participation numbers. The only for students in high schools without universal free school lunch in New York City, only 35% participate, even though over 75% are eligible. And the so that that's one thing. The other is that there are many children, over 110,000 students. Citizens Committee for Children recently did a report in New York City who are just above the income cutoff for free school lunch on the current system, whose families can't afford the lunch fees. And so students are put in a position of making a decision about whether to get online for fear of accruing a bill for their families that the family can't afford. So the shaming takes place both in the cafeteria, and also it impacts the family, because if a family gets a bill for basically a service in the school that, you know, and if the idea is that public schools, there should be no charges for services, that their families can't pay, that impacts parent involvement in schools as well. So this is, it's not unique to New York City. This is a national problem, and many other big cities have taken action. Dallas, Boston, Chicago, Philadelphia, among many others, who have done universal free school lunch, because really the only way to truly get away from lunch shaming is to make school lunch available to all children at no cost, regardless of income.
And let's just be clear about this. This is about any kid who comes to school can go to the cafeteria and get a lunch, eat the lunch, go back to class. That's what we're talking about here, right?
Exactly right, right. And, the concept is basic. It's lunch, like any other thing, like teachers in the classroom, like, books. And children aren't asked to contribute towards the cost of the city providing that service based on their income. The notion of public school is that services are available to all children in concept equally, and not having to take out of pocket, parents had to take out of pocket to cover the cost of those things. And that's what we're basically saying. This should just be a normal part of the school day where children aren't divided by income, because kids tease each other enough about income issues in
right.
all kinds of different ways.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean,
Absolutely.
We all know that, right? Peer pressure and, again, the smallest gradation in income difference.
Right.
Children can...
No, they're very much...
sneakers you have, right?
That's right. That's right. I can remember the shame of going to school in Skips sneakers. I mean, everything
yes.
becomes a matter of status. And
exactly.
it is profoundly... You know, I think about, and I don't want to take this is serious, because you think about how you felt when it was
yes.
happening to you, and it
right.
was the end of the world, and it
That's
made,
right.
and this is something that can easily. How much additional funding is needed to make this not an issue? I mean, to make this lunch available to all.
Well, before I say, I just want to add to one point there, just to say, Chris, that as adults, you might say, "Oh, if kids are hungry enough, they're going to get online, right?"
Right.
You can kind of dismiss it, but the truth is, hundreds of thousands of children sit out while other kids are eating and don't eat at all rather than be labeled. And peer pressure in adolescence, it's a developmental, phase and issue, is intense. And you're having kids sitting on the sideline saying, "No, I'm not hungry," or "I don't like the way the food looks." But underlying that is the shame that you were just talking about. And the cost to the city is minimal. So school food is a federal program. Over 90% of the funding comes from the federal government. Each additional meal brings in additional money to the city. And to expand universal to all students, by our estimates, is an additional $8.75 million. The total cost we have is $20 million a year. There's already $11 million in the budget. So all that needs to be added is $8.75 million. To reach all 1.1 million students.
And yep. at a city council budget hearing this week, the school's chancellor reportedly issued instructions to principals to give school lunch to any student who asked for that. Does that solve the problem? Is that what was necessary? Or
No, that is a total deflection. That is nothing new. That has been the policy of the city for years and years. What that misses, you know, of course that should be like a baseline, but that should be expected in New York City. But what that completely misses and why that's a deflection from the real issue is that it doesn't address the hundreds of thousands of children who will be too ashamed to ever get up online. Right? So you're basically saying, putting the burden on the child to go up online and identify themselves and say, I don't have money. My parents can't afford this.
And we were just talking about how that's not the mindset of a kid who is hungry and status conscious and very much concerned about his or her image in the world or in the school, in the world of the school, correct?
Right. Okay. Exactly. It's actually the opposite. And then, or you're also asking the school staff to do that. And if the idea is you're trying to equalize things for children in school, if you're talking about educational equity, if you're talking about, racially and economically integrating schools, then this mayor should be doing everything he can to remove any structural financial distinctions that exist in the school system.
A level playing field. Right.
Very simple, very inexpensive, and totally in his power to do.
Well, and there are also a number of the turnout at the press conference. There's a large support in the city council for this. So this is an issue that is on the mayor to deliver. He did talk about this during the campaign, did he not?
He did. This was universal free school lunch was one of his campaign promises in 2013. He talked about eliminating the stigma and bringing in more federal money. And in the first year, universal free school lunch was put in place in middle school, sixth through eighth grade middle schools. And that was an important first step. But there has been no movement in terms of expanding this program. And there has been resistance. And it's frankly, in many ways, inexplicable given the agenda of the mayor, the concentration on education, and the fundamental understanding that if children are hungry, they are at a grave disadvantage in participating in academic activities. And if you want all students to thrive, make sure food is available without any social burdens added to them.
Liz Ackles is the executive director of Community Food Advocates. We're fighting the good fight here for funding, for universal free school lunch in all New York City public schools. Thank you for coming back on the show, Liz, and the fight continues.
Yes, thank you, Chris, and thanks, as always, for the amazing support of DC 37.
All right. That's about all the time we have on the show. We will be back next week. The producer is Rudy Orozco. The engineer is Andrea Minocchio. We're on 91.5 WNYE. We are on podcast on iTunes, and we're on www.dc37.net. Till next time, ciao.